Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land.
He's
Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. We sing the praises of Zorn.
Yeah, we do. We can't argue that.
Eric was
Zorn.
Singing his own praises.
I was singing my own song.
You deserve
it. It's very catchy. It's very catchy.
Yep, you deserve it, Eric. Eric, of course, fine writer for your Chicago Tribune and a guest with us every Monday here on the show. Much to discuss with you. Let's start with what you're referring to as the parade.
I keep misspeaking. It was not a parade. It was a protest.
Right.
And this is my fault and my failing. It was a protest on Saturday morning on the Dan Ryan.
10 a.m.
They blocked off the Dan Ryan. And
we all knew it was coming.
We all knew it was coming. And the thing that really interests me about this is that this was a protest against violence in the city, which is supposed to be one of Mayor Emanuel's Achilles heels politically.
Yeah.
And it looked like he was going to be the guy who was going to be the focus of this protest. He was going to it was going to end up looking bad for him. So on Friday, I think it was, all of a sudden, going from saying this is, you know, we were not, he was raising questions about it and alarms about it. Suddenly, he was all on board with this protest. He was all behind it on Friday, and then on Saturday, the protest begins, and apparently there was some confusion about whether there was a deal so that they could block off two lanes of the Dan Ryan. I think it's four lanes at that point, maybe five. I can't remember exactly what the... But they were going to allow at least two lanes of traffic to go by.
Yeah.
So they weren't going to block the Dan Ryan. They were just going to kind of choke it off a little bit.
Yeah.
And this was unacceptable to Father Flager, Father Michael Flager, the priest at St. Sabina, who has been leading these protests. And so during the protest, then they negotiated, and I guess the march stalled until they finally allowed them to block all the lanes of the Dan Ryan, which is the dramatic gesture that Father Flager and the marchers wanted.
And more people could get hurt. If only two lanes are blocked, there's going to be cars going right next to you. That's not good.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure they were going very slowly because it was choked off.
Yeah,
but it's the dramatic gesture. And so in the front of this protest, yeah, is Father Flager sort of arm in arm with Eddie Johnson, the police superintendent, making it look like, you know, the city is behind this protest, which Mayor Emanuel had said he was behind the protest. Into this fray tweets Governor Rauner, who is complaining then on Twitter about the chaos that's being caused. And there was no chaos on the south side. They were able to divert the traffic. I didn't hear any stories about, you know, a child in an ambulance dies because couldn't get to the hospital. It was no chaos. It was some traffic backups where they had to divert traffic, but there was no chaos. This was a very effective protest on the part of Father Flager. So Rauner jumps in and tweets about this and how he's very disappointed in Mayor Emanuel. And then Mayor Emanuel tweets back. He says, like, you know, he basically says it was a peaceful protest. Delete your account. And delete your account is a
mic drop.
Internet slang mic drop, like, you know, get out of here.
Yeah.
And so suddenly this event becomes a victory for Mayor Emanuel. And the bad guy is Governor Rauner,
right,
who managed to sort of just step in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Mayor Emanuel now flies off to Asia for his trade mission. And Governor Rauner is left trying to clean up the mess, and he's tweeting about, well, the chaos I was referring to was traffic, the backup, and there just wasn't chaos.
We talked about this for days, so people knew to make other plans. Don't be on the Ryan Saturday morning at 10 a.m.
And there were people, I was talking to the woman who runs our letters to the editor, Liz Grivey, and she was saying that she was getting a lot of letters from people out in the suburbs who were saying that they were breaking the law and so on. And I'm thinking to myself, this is a stretch of road that you probably never drive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those of you in the western suburbs and the northern suburbs, you very seldom are on that road. So this isn't really inconveniencing you. This protest was designed to call attention to the problem of urban violence, and it's a problem that still is going to haunt Mayor Emanuel. But this one protest, he managed to be the hero of it in a way by having his police superintendent walk arm in arm with Father Flager and by playing this political judo on Governor Rauner. It was
hilarious.
Would
you agree, Eric, that it's yet another case of the message being lost, that the protest itself becomes the story instead of the message?
Well, a little bit, yeah. I mean, I think it was unclear exactly what the protesters were wanting to do other than to call attention to this problem. I mean, there was not, you know, an ask like, we want this law passed, or
yeah,
we want this initiative.
It's just in general.
It was just in general. And clearly,
we need to do something.
The problem has to do with education and jobs. It has to do with the flow of guns from Indiana.
May I ask something? Sure. What has changed today because of that protest?
Oh, well, nothing has changed. The protest doesn't work that way. I mean, you don't get a change overnight. But you, I don't know what their ask is. And this is one of the things that when you do a protest, you have to be asking for something to happen rather than.
And you need a good chant.
Yeah, you should have a good chant.
So anyway, I thought that was a very interesting story over the weekend, how Governor Rauner managed to step in it and make himself the story when he could have just said, the thing to say would be, I share the concerns of these marchers about inner city violence. I think we need more jobs in Illinois. We need better education.
That's the right kind way of to thing spin a governor it thinks.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Right?
And I don't know who. I mean, I'm assuming he controls his own Twitter account, and I don't know who he's playing to when he's trying to get people excited about chaos in Chicago when they're marching peacefully down the expressway. So anyway,
we were trying to figure out on the show on Friday. Judy Pilak and I were trying to figure out what could be done. There's so many protests, and sometimes it's a cause that I'm 100% for, but the result is not what I'd want it to be. You know, I know that it calls attention, so that's the reason for the protest, but then the end result is rarely the change that they were hoping for.
Well, yeah, I mean, Wendy asked what's different today, and the answer is, very little is different today, and this is true of a lot of protests, but, you have to call attention, things like the civil rights movement, they started with smaller protests,
right,
and then they're larger protests, and gradually you get people to pay attention to the issue, to do the reading on it, and if you're in the right and you can make your case, then you can move voters and move politicians,
but it happens slowly, clearly. The lady who climbed the Statue of Liberty the other day. Was anything really accomplished in climbing the Statue of Liberty?
No.
She got arrested.
No, I don't think so. I mean, that was, it's one of these little...
She made the news.
These little actions that... I mean, in a way, it's like it's one of these things where when you make a protest, you make a statement, you are meant to sort of motivate people who are in the middle or who are indifferent to the problem to get more involved. It is a gradual process. You're not going to all of a sudden climb the Statue of Liberty and have a bunch of politicians say,
Do you agree with me, though, that there must be some better way out there, some more effective way? There's got to be.
Talk radio? I don't know. Listening to shows like this.
Go back to Colin Kaepernick's situation where he's upset about the way African Americans are treated by police, and he comes up with this idea of kneeling during the national anthem. Well, it went back to bite him because then he couldn't get work after that.
It bit him, but I think it did continue to keep the focus on the problem that he was trying to. He wasn't trying to bash the military.
But there was more focus on the act of kneeling during the national anthem than there was about African American people being mistreated by law.
It became anti-veteran.
They tried to make that get twisted.
That did get twisted around. I do think though that when you have someone like that making the statement and trying to keep repeating it, this is not about disrespect for the military. Or veterans, or for the country, or the Constitution. It's about police, the way police treat African American men.
Yeah,
that was what he was. That was what he was kneeling about. And this act of his, although it had a lot of distractions, I think it did keep some focus on that problem. And it did keep that. It did motivate people. And again, it's one of these things where you're not going to get change overnight. But if everyone says, "Well, I'm going to write a sternly worded letter to the editor. I'm going to make a strong Facebook post about this," that people have to just get out and they show people that they feel strongly about this, and that other people feel as they might feel.
And
so on. It's a great question. I'm not a student of the history of protests. It might be interesting to have somebody on at some point who can talk about how these things happen, because they don't happen overnight. You look at even movements that went relatively quickly, like the gay rights movement, which sort of started with the Stonewall riots and so on in New York in the 68 maybe or something.
Yeah.
And all the way to legalization of same-sex marriage about 50 years later, less than 50 years later.
Yeah.
I mean, those things, nothing happened overnight there either, but you have to keep public attention on your issue. I mean, so it's an interesting question. So,
that's Eric Zorn. sorry, in just a little bit.
Do you need us to Heimlich you?
No, that's very nice of you to offer one, but I should be okay. A debate over name tags that is very, very peculiar. We'll get to that in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, along with Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Stick around, WGN. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. This seems like a strange thing for there to be a debate about, but boy, there is, and it's name tags. Please explain, Eric.
Well, I was listening to this audiobook, Heads in Beds, a Reckless Memoir of Hotels, Hustles, and So-Called Hospitality. It's a 2012 book by Jacob Tomsky, and he worked in the hotel industry for a long time. Mm-hmm. And toward the end, he gives us advice to customers. And he says, though people are forced to wear name tags, you should never feel comfortable enough to actually call them by their names. Gluing a name tag to anyone's chest makes him or her subordinate. Using it without permission implies that you are aware of this fact and don't mind rudely pointing it out. To pick the name off a tag and use it, whatever your intention, makes employees acutely feel that they have lost their personal worth, that they themselves are included in the price. Their mothers use that name. What right do you have to use it? Just because you walked into the lobby? My advice is to ask permission. I've never had a job where I had to wear a name tag, but I read that and I thought, my goodness, I have to say that when I go to like a grocery store or to a hotel and someone's got a name tag on, I don't use the name. I don't call people by the name because I have this, I have some sort of internal aversion to that. Like I have the sense that of what this man is talking about. I've never seen it put into words before, but I do have that feeling like that it is somehow, it emphasizes the imbalance in the relationship. So, I put this question out on Facebook and people like, do you have a job where you have to wear a name tag and do you want people to call you by your name?
Then why wear a name tag if you don't want people calling you by your name?
Well, you don't have a choice in most cases. I think when you work at a
management insists you put a name tag on.
But I think people are really reluctant to use that. I have a friend who always does, and I've never really thought about it, but I understand now, I think, why I and sort of recoil a little bit, which is that it's because he doesn't know, the employee doesn't know your name.
Sure, of course.
So it has
introduce
a,
yourself.
Well, how do you ever have a sense, like, does it ever creep you out, like, when someone takes a credit from you, his credit card, and then hands it back to you and says, Bill, thanks for staying with us? Does that make you feel weird? I'm fine with that,
and I don't know about you, Wendy. If I see somebody with a name tag, I then use their name all the time, every day.
It's better than, hey, you. I think it's more personable.
Yeah,
it's not
too
subordinate.
But have you,
I don't mean it to be condescending in any way, just the opposite.
I mean it to be friendlier. I know you don't, but the question I have is always, how do people who are in that position feel? I found one poll, which was like totally unscientific. It was on the Straight Dope site, and it was like 2-1. People felt really uncomfortable using a name. I mean, when they just asked people like you and me, who don't have to wear name tags, do you use the name? 2-1 said they don't. They feel uncomfortable using the name. And then when they polled people who had to wear name tags, it was like 4-1. They didn't really like it when people addressed them by their name. But again, it was so small, such a small poll that it was pretty unscientific.
I had to wear a name tag at Brookfield Zoo when I worked there for all those years.
Yeah.
And I didn't think twice when somebody would say, hey, Wendy, how do we do this on the motor safari?
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm sure that they're and even from the response on Facebook that I got from people, there's clearly a mix of people who feel fine with it, who actually like it. Management likes it because if Wendy, the employee at Brookfield Zoo, is rude to someone, they can go to management and go,
right,
that Wendy,
they
that
often
wench,
complained.
That wench, yes, I know exactly who she is.
You know, I eat out a lot. My wife and I have dinner out almost every night.
Right.
And I can't tell you how many times we've had a server, and that's after I've used their name a couple of times, that'll say, hey, don't forget, ask for me next time, or I hope we see you guys soon, and if you do come in, my name's Garrett. Ask for me. I'd love to see you again. Yeah.
Wow.
And in Boston last week, in three different restaurant settings, they would give me either a card or they'd write their name down on something and hand it to me, saying, when you're in next year, ask for me.
You must be a great tipper, huh?
Yeah.
I guess so. I don't know. I don't think it's the tip, though. I think it's just the friendliness that's exchanged back and forth during the meal.
Do you say, like, when he says, my name is Garrett, I'll be your server, do you say, and my name is Bill, I will be eating the food that you bring?
No.
My brother does that to this day. He did it when he was in high school. He still does it. I hate going out to restaurants with him.
But they've heard that a bunch. They've heard that before.
Yeah, but they laugh, and it just kind of breaks the ice, and then everybody's happy.
But I'm interested in hearing from people who have to do this, because, like I say, I don't. I've never had to wear a name tag.
You've never had a job with a name tag?
Well, we have lanyards. We have security lanyards.
Oh, right.
But that's not not for
that's different.
Public. That's for the security guards.
Yeah.
When they tackle you, they can say what what your name is. But I'm just sort of curious, because if people are offended or feel like I'm not recognizing their humanity by not using their name, like the person who's bagging the groceries.
But Eric, that author painted as being condescending, saying that's your mom gets to call you by your name, not some customer who's
right.
You know, having a short transaction with you. I disagree with that. I think it.
Well, my point is, I don't know that you, as the person using the name, has the right to agree or disagree with how that person feels about.
Oh, sure, that's true.
So my question is, like, how do people feel? So anyway, if people want to go on my Facebook page and let me know how they feel, I'd really like to hear more about that, because I might write about this, because it was such a
you should.
Yeah.
And Glenn wants to call and talk right now about this. Glenn?
Real quick, I'm coming from an old hotel background. A lot of times when I was a supervisor, my staff was rather large. And for me to be able to address my staff, you know, a coworker or maybe somebody who was a little under me, it was easier to remember their name, obviously, because of the fact that they had the name tag on. But, Bill, in regards to your point, people would address me by my name because I had a name tag on. And when I would be at the front desk and I saw their names, if they would say, "Hey, Glenn, how you doing?" You know, like we were best buddies.
Yeah.
I'd turn around and turn around and go, "Yo, Bill, how are you?" Like we're best friends.
Sure.
And, you know, but it was not because of the fact that I was trying to be your best friend. I was making you feel just as uncomfortable as I was by you just addressing me like we're best buddies. And you don't know me, I don't know you, so let's keep it at a professional level, you know, and you would just address me as, "Thank you, sir," or "Nice to meet you, sir," and I would do the same thing. But you calling me by my first name, that's what my friends call me.
Yeah.
Like you said before, that's what my mom calls me.
Oh, see,
I don't know you,
like
you don't know me.
All right,
that's
Glenn, we appreciate that. Can I call you Glenn now?
No. Don't.
Well, there's a little difference. Someone on the phone, if you have a service person you're calling and they say, "My name is, you know, Glenn, and I'm going to be helping you fix your computer problem," I think it's okay to refer to, if the person has introduced himself, and same thing with a wait staff, if the person has actually spoken their name to you, that is
written, then it's okay.
There's oral permission, I think, to use the name. I tend not to, even in that case, unless I just have to get, like, I need the server's attention right away.
Yeah.
I wish everyone wore name tags, because...
And everybody all day long.
I know, but there are people that, like, your kids played soccer with years ago that you've known, but then you haven't seen them for four years, and all of a sudden you see them, and you're like, "I can't re-ask them their name, and I don't remember it." We should all wear name tags.
Just call everybody Judge or something, like
Judge?
Babe Ruth used to do. "Hey, Judge, how's it going?"
That's the answer.
Champ.
Thank you so much, Eric. It's Eric Zorn, everybody. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. We'll find out what Steve has coming up in just a minute. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.